Let's do a podcast. You guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, November 12th, 2017. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can subscribe to the show on Patreon. $3 a month, premium content that you will not find on your regular Mundane Festival RSS feed. There's movie reviews. There's the latest thing I put up there was with Mike Brown and me talking about The Last of Us 2 theories and whatnot. The trailer that we talked about, the new trailer that came out, Spider-Man, and a little bit of violence in video game stuff. So we had a really cool conversation about that. I'm probably going to be talking about Lady Bird. I saw that this week. I saw that today, actually. And so I'll probably be nerding out about that by myself, much like I did with Columbus, which I did talk about. I got that on from iTunes, and it's one of my favorite movies of the year, if not the favorite. It's just like one of those in the pocket dope movies where, yeah, there's some emotional stuff that goes on, but it's not like super heavy. It's almost like, it's like when you have a song that you can wind down to. Like, that movie just kind of has that. It just has that vibe where, like, there's not... I don't know. I love that movie. It's one of my favorites of the year. It's a beautiful film. So that's on iTunes now. And you can catch my review of it on Indie Movie Corner on Patreon. So probably be talking about Lady Bird this week. Got a real return guest I'm scheduled to talk to, and we're gonna nerd about. It's one of you guys' favorite guests. So he's gonna make his triumphant return, and we're gonna be talking about some cool shit. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now on Twitter at Chris Lambert. This is episode 249. I have a super, 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 super special guest, Karen Morrow from the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. Very excited. I sound like this kid that I used to make fun of. Well, he was kind of a douche. But so, like, if he would say something about me, I'd talk about the way that he used to talk like this. He used to talk like Bane sometimes. I'm Gotham's Reckoning. That's a little Bane and a little bit of Sean Connery. But he was like a black kid with braces. Anyway, so... we're going to get to Karen in a bit. I just want to talk about a couple things. So this week was pretty cool. I had a solid work week. Finished really strong on Friday. I finished really strong at work. Handled some TPS reports and took myself into the weekend on a good note. I went to Wegmans after. And Wegmans is one of my new favorite places. But that's another Target Walmart money pit, I would say. Wegmans has good food. I bought one of their pizzas that like their ready made pizzas that you just pop in the oven, and I got some like vegetables and added toppings on there and stuff. That was pretty good. I just finished eating the leftovers before I started this podcast. Full disclosure, it's really, really good. But that's one of those places like where you should not go if you're hungry. Never go to the grocery store hungry, because you just end up spending way more money. And I bought like six little chicken wings from their wing bar. And when the lady rung me up, it was like $8. And I think it's just by the weight of it. Those wings are good. Like that's, but it's still like, I don't know how to navigate through that sometimes, the wing bar. It was, but they, anyway, it was good. That's fat boy shit. Going to the gym tomorrow after work. I'm making my fat ass go to the gym, and I'm going to do it tomorrow. Last night I had a really fun night last night. I did a show in Bayville, New Jersey, which is, if anybody's like, if you're listening to this and you're in the tri-state area, it's near Toms River. It's South Jersey, basically. I don't know. Somebody called it Central, but it feels like that's South Jersey. That's like, it's like an hour and a half. I don't know how, it's an hour and a half from me, and I'm close to New York. So I would say it's essentially South Jersey. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's near Toms River. Anyway, so I did this show at this Elks Lodge, and it when you do stuff at Elks Lodges and VFWs, you never know what you're going to get. It could be a mixed bag. Like it could either be really fun, people could be really drunk, or it could be like, it could get, and sometimes it might get slightly racist. So I was just kind of on my P's and Q's about it. And I was listening to my hip hop shit the whole way down, just getting focused. I added a lot of the Roots records from like Rising Down, Game Theory, The Tipping Point, and just added some shit from there, some Mos Def that I added to it. So I just wanted to get my mind right. And so I get down there, and it was a good set. It was like this fundraiser for a high school football team in that area. And I get there thinking, like, my manager told me, okay, Chris, it's going to be three comics. It's going to be someone hosting. You're middling. You're doing like 25 to 30 minutes. And then the headliner. And that's it. So I get there, and I find out that the host brought somebody, and he was doing time. He was doing like 10. I was like, all right. And I said, how much time are you doing? She's like a half hour, 25. I was like, okay. And I was like, okay, here goes another long ass show in South Jersey. And people are drinking already. Holy shit. And then the booker of the show said, oh, I got this guy that was on such and such TV show. I'm not going to say it. Like a TV show, and did a couple movies. And before they brought the guy up, they did a little montage of some of the shows that he was on. And I was like, okay. And he'd never done comedy before. So that was that. And I said, okay, this could be a shit show. And I'm in there, and I'm looking at, and just casing the joint. And the booker is apparently a wedding DJ. I think he's just like a DJ for hire. And so he has a good setup. He's got a good sound system. And I just told him, hey, but you know, so he was like, oh, the headliner's not here yet. And I said, well, you got an hour of show right here, right now. You got over an hour of a show. We should just start on time. And he's like, oh, okay. And I told him, like, you know, you might want to just bring the lights down. And you have the spotlight on the stage, and he already had the spotlight. Just like, bring the lights down some more. And he did that, and the mood was set. And so the first guy goes up, he does like 10, he does okay. And you can just kind of see the vibes of the crowd. There's like a guy just being loud as fuck. He's drunk. There's another woman. It's really two people out of the 50 or 60 people in the room. Really two people that are kind of caught, that are causing a problem. And I said, okay, these, I pointed them out. So these two people are going to be a problem. So the next person goes up, female comic. She goes up, she's doing her thing. She's plugging, chugging through. She's doing her thing. And those people persist. This one woman is on FaceTime talking to somebody. She's drunk as fuck. And I'm like, oh shit. And then the drunk dude at the same table is talking, trying to make himself heard. And before I could get up and go to the booker, there's a guy, an audience member, that just beelines over to the booker and says, you got to do something about this guy. So I just went back to my seat. So I was like, better him to say that than me, like a guy that's putting on the fundraiser that says something, you know, somebody that's there to have a good time. And I was like, okay, good. Glad he said something. And then like towards the end of her set, this woman's set, she's Jewish. She's a Jewish comedian. She just says, like, oh, is anybody Jewish here? And it just got really quiet. It got really quiet. The drunk lady is like near the exit where everybody came, you know, like the entrance / exit. And she mutters something. It's inaudible, but it's loud. And I don't know what she says, but it was definitely a reaction to her comment about being Jewish. And then it got really quiet. And it was just like weird, and there was a weird tension in the room. And somebody says, yeah, we kind of have a problem with the Jews and with the people in Lakewood. And the headliner's there by now. He's there at the time. And so the headliners had been there for a while. And he says, yeah, you know, there's a town called Lakewood near here, and there's a lot of Hasidic Jews. And I was like, oh, okay. I said, I just see them in the city, and I see them in Williamsburg. They're there. That's where they live. Doesn't really bother me. I don't even think of it. I'm just like, hey, you guys dress different and you have a religion and all right, let's just exist together. I don't give a shit. Anyway, so it just got weird. And so so she gets off stage and she does fine. And then I get up there and I get brought up there and I just addressed it. I just said, you know, I said, yeah, this is fun. I'm happy to be here, you know, go through the little preamble. And I said, you know, it seemed like everything was going good until she mentioned being Jewish. And it just got like it was like a little Schindler's List vibe to the whole night after that. And I was like, what's going on with that? And I just like needled them a little bit and opened them up, and they started laughing. They were into it. I was like, look, I'm not Jewish. And that got a big laugh. And I just went in and just like, you know, did my thing. And I had a great fucking time. And then I said, I did riff with them. And I said, you know, like, wow, you guys, there's one thing that impresses me about this town. And there's only one thing. And I just, and I said, like, these guys had a, on my way, like minutes away from the Elks Lodge, there was this, I saw a standalone Roy Rogers, and I hadn't seen one of those in at least 20 years. And I was just like impressed. I was just like mesmerized by that. And I just, talked about that for a couple minutes because I literally had never seen. I know on the, what do you call that? I don't know if that's the New York State Thruway or when you're like when you're driving to Albany and upstate New York, like there's Roy Rogers at rest stops and stuff, but not like a standalone like McDonald's or Burger King. So anyway, I just riffed on that, and I ended up having a good time, and I had this chunk that I talk about like Trump without really mentioning him. I have this bit about a new black family that America should believe in that I've been working on for a while. And it just goes hand in hand with Trump. And I don't even mention Trump's name in the set. And they got laughs and they try to get a little tight. And I made fun of them for getting tight for it. And had a good set, closed, had really probably one of the best sets I've had this year. And it was really dope. And so I'm getting ready to leave. I go to the bathroom. And as I'm like washing my hands, there's this guy's like, oh, guy comes in. It's just me and him. So, oh, that was good, man. I was crying. That was such a good show, man. So, and even though I'm a Trump supporter, and you know, like, even though you said something about him and the first family, now I didn't say anything about the first family. When I refer to Trump, I don't say, fuck this guy and blah, fuck man. Blah. I don't do that. It just comes up. I do what I do. And so I wasn't trying to have any type of conversation with this dude because I just performed. And I was like, oh, all right. I'm glad you liked the show, man. So, yeah, you know, you talked about the first. I said, all right. Glad you liked the show. And then I left. And I think he was standing outside smoking a cigarette, and I got in my car and I left. And it was a good night. But it's always that one person trying to, like, trying to confront or trying to just say something. And they were just like the drunk, like I had to like calm some people down during the show. Like, but I reset the room. I reset the whole vibe of the room to where it got, so it wouldn't be weird anymore. And the headliner came over. He's like, "Yo, man, he didn't say yo. He was a middle-aged white dude, but he said, yeah, that was a good set." And it ended up being fine. But that's definitely one of those earn your paycheck gigs. But it wasn't as like, I know I talked to Fonte about it, like just earning your points. It's like an RPG, like a role playing game, like earning, you know, your experience points. And it ended up being a good time. This is just going to be a robust intro. This is going to be a big ass episode. So it is what it is, man. It's a big hit to the comedy community, a big like big news story in the comedy community. Louis C.K. Was accused of sexual misconduct. He's accused of sexual misconduct by five women. Four of them named themselves, one did not, and it was in the New York Times, and the internet was ablaze with hot takes, and so it was ablaze with hot takes for about a day. Thursday afternoon it came out, and I was on my way home from work, and I was like, oh shit, then I got Louis. And everybody's like, oh fuck him, and he was never funny. And that's bullshit. Like that's he was never funny. But I remember when he was recording his special, and times that he recorded his latest special 2017 in DC. There are a lot of people that I know that opened for him. There are people that went to the show and they were like, "Oh, I'm at the Louis show." They put it on Facebook. They was like, "Yo, I'm seeing Louis," and yada yada yada. They was siced and all of that good stuff. But now the motherfucker wasn't funny. He was never funny. And I was like, okay. Oh, he said nigger in a joke, so I never liked him anyway. Probably one of the most thoughtful nigger n-word jokes by a white person. But whatever, you all right. And so then Friday, he came out with a statement. I don't know if it was some people call it an apology. I'm sorry was not in that. But to me, I mean, he handled that in the best way that he could. Now, the only people, he doesn't owe me an apology or anybody else of my colleagues. And I use that I'm making air quotes, but you can't see it. My colleagues on social media, he does not owe them anything. The only thing he owes a real apology to is the women that he was inappropriate in front of. Like, that's who he owes it. He doesn't owe me shit. What he's given me is great comedy. And to me, I will tell you how I feel about it. Louis C.K. is one of my favorite comedians. Like, my favorite comedian. Like, once I started comedy, like, you find out, you learn about the people that are like, doing, that are the greats. And currently that's who Louis C.K., Patrice O'Neill, and Bill Burr are my three favorite contemporary comedians. And I've said that I've been doing this podcast for about, I'm going on 5 years. I've said it's littered throughout my podcast. I'll talk about, oh, that Louis bit, oh, that Patrice bit, oh, that Burr bit, you know? And I feel some kind of way about it. I feel upset. I'm upset. I'm sad. The guy obviously has a problem. He's hurt a lot of people. I feel bad for the women that he hurt. I feel bad for Louis' kids. They're young women. I feel bad, you know, for everybody involved. And it's sad. It's sad. Like, you know, Cosby went down. He really has serious fucking problems. And it's sad when people it's sad. Like part of me feels like I've been let down, but to keep it 100, my real heroes are my fucking parents, you know, but when you start to grow as an individual, as an artist or whatever you do, whatever field you're in, there are people that are at the apex that you look up to and you admire for what they do. And that just goes, I think that goes part and parcel with people that have a craft. If you're a woodworker and you make furniture, I'm sure there's somebody that's like, yo, this guy is the Louis C.K. of paint, of making chairs. This guy is the Michael Jordan of gardening. Like, there's just people. And then when those people, they're human just like the rest of us. And this is a hell of a reminder that one of my favorite artists is a human. I mean, it's happened with R. Kelly before, and people say, "Whoa, they're R. Kelly's next." Well, that shit's been out on R. Kelly, but he's still selling out shows. Like, there's people that know about this shit, and they're going to those shows. Do I think Louis is done for him? I think he's going to have to sit down for a while. I think he'll come back. I think that movie will come back. I really want to see it. I think it's going to come back. But I just remember less than a month ago, I was just like, ooh, why is he doing this? When I heard about what I Love You, Daddy was about, it was just kind of like, ooh, boy. Ooh, it's an homage to Woody Allen, and it's just fucking weird. It's just like, part of me feels like he wants to get caught. I don't know. I felt some kind of way about it. And I've heard things, but I've never really been close to him, and the homies on the Hot Fire Starter podcast, they record Wednesday nights. And I think that whenever I don't think the Louis stuff had dropped, but what they did say that was important was that, and I think was right on time, was the fact that people, if it's somebody that you like, if you don't like the person, if you don't really care for their work, it's going to be easy for you to say, oh, fuck that guy. Nah, he said that thing and I don't like the way, fuck him. Like, it's going to be easy. But what if it happens to be somebody you like? If it's like a person that you really, and I've heard on different podcasts, I've heard people, and just in conversation with people that I know that are talking about it, you know, it's just like, ugh. And it's people that names have come up, people that I really dig, and it's just like, fuck, ugh, man, I hope that's not true. And so there's more to come. There's more stuff to come. What I don't like is just like people within the industry they're just kind of disingenuous, because they'll do anything to get ahead, and they act one way on social media. But then what they do when it really comes time to be righteous with their shit, do they really do it? And I don't know. But I will say this, man. Like, I never really met Louis. I did my 30th birthday, like 7 years ago. I did a show on my birthday at the Knitting Factory. And this is when Hannibal Buress used to run it. This was in the first year of him doing that show. And he eventually handed it off to the guys that are running it right now. Will Miles, Clark Jones, and Kenny DeForest. And that was like a big deal. Because this is like where Hannibal was on the rise. He was already buzzing. He was already working. He was working for Saturday Night Live. And he hit me up on Facebook and he was like, hey, he messaged me. He was like, hey, man, do you want to do the knit on 221? And I was like, hell yeah. And like, that was my birthday. And that was like a big fucking deal for me, because I was less than a year into comedy. And that was the first real show that I got booked on and got paid for it. And it was just really, really dope. And I, you know, was like, just really excited now. And just to put it into perspective, I was hanging out open for my buddy Damian Lemon last week, And we were just shooting the shit, talking after the show, again, having drinks and stuff. And stuff, something, I don't know what how it came up, but I was like, just like, we were just talking about comedy and everything, just talking shop. And we mentioned the Knit or something, and I said, yeah, you know, like that was, I had my Kendrick Lamar XXL moment at that show where, like, before I had gotten booked on it, I remember, so it was Hannibal's show. Hannibal was there. Damian Lemon was there. Ali Wong was there on the show. Donald Glover was on the show. So this is like 2000, maybe 2008, 2009. But it was before I would be on the show. And that was like as a really young, I'm still a young comic, but as a really, really, really young zygote of a comic, where all these people that I respected, and this is like, this is Hannibal Buress. So Hannibal Buress is, you know, on the rise. Damian Lemon, one of my favorite comics, doing his thing. Ali Wong, who had a killer special, Baby Cobra. This was before she did that. Donald Glover, before Camp, before fucking whatever his, you know, before fucking If You Want It, you know, all that shit. That was, you know, way before that. And I was there like that. If you remember that song that Kendrick Lamar had, The Heart Part One, where he's rapping over Umi Says, and he talks about like networking at XXL, and they were shooting the freshman list where, you know, the freshman rappers, like the top rapper, young rappers up and coming, and he wasn't on the list. And J. Cole was supposed to be there, and J. Cole was running late, and Kendrick was like, yo, let me get on a joint. And they laughed at him. And then now Kendrick Lamar is fucking Kendrick Lamar, like years later. But that was like my moment where it wasn't like, oh, I want to take their spot. But it was like, I wanted to be like those comics. I wanted to be in that group because I thought that they, you know, those people were cool. So Hannibal books me on the show. Maybe that's a few months later. And I do the show. And shout out to Carlita Durand, very dope singer-songwriter. She's been on like Foreign Exchange Records. Shout out to JB, who's a friend of the show from Oklahoma City, doing his thing. They were in town and they came to see me do Hannibal's show. And I did my set. I was the first comic up. And I did okay. Like I did fine. And it was like really cool. And I was like, fuck, I did this really dope show. And then right after I get off stage, Hannibal brings on Louis C.K. And I was like, fuck. Like I just said, I think I put it up on Facebook. I think I kind of just opened for Louis C.K. And that was just like really cool. And this was pre-FX show Louis. And he was working on something. He did his thing. He was fucking awesome. And I think that may have seen him around maybe one or two times after that within the last 8 to 9 years. And he's just always been that comic that was him, Burr, and Patrice were like those everyman regular dudes that, you know, obviously they were pretty much the same guy off stage as they were on stage. And it was just like that heightened element of being of performance that I always talk about on the show. And he definitely had an effect on the way that I approach comedy and the way that, like, pushing myself to look inward and all of that stuff. So I'm not going to sit here and say that he wasn't one of my influence when I know that he was. The guy's just got a problem, and I hope he gets help for it. Yeah, I just thought I'd share that, man. Like, these people are human, and I don't know that I necessarily we're all flawed, and I think it just comes with what I've been saying on the show for the past couple of years. We just have to have empathy for each other. That doesn't happen. Jerking off in front of somebody doesn't happen if you say, man, I'm thinking about doing this, and how would that make that other person feel? And I'm in this position of power to make, because if you're not famous, you're just a creep. But the fact that you are successful and famous and you have this power that you can wield, and you that even makes shit worse, because that person is put into a position where they can't it suppresses and stifles them from saying anything, and you put this you exert this power over them that it's not fair. And then you think of these women that ended their careers because of fear of what would happen to them if they spoke out. So that's why you see all the influx of people that are coming out. And I don't think there's going to be it's not going to be an end to it, you know, like, so people are, you got to watch how you behave. Just fucking be nice to people, man. Yeah. And then to the people that are writing the think pieces and that are wondering why they're not where they think they should be, show business doesn't owe you anything. I remember one time I was working at Best Buy when I was in grad school. And I worked in a movie section. There was a guy who's just like kind of a, I don't know if he was gay or he's just like a, I don't know. But the guy was talking to me. I was like, oh yeah, you know, I'm working in a movie section. I'm an actor. And he's like, oh, what have you been? I haven't been in anything. I'm still training. I've done plays and stuff like that. And then for some reason he started talking about the casting couch and telling me about people. Like, I was like, oh, you know, if you would do this, then you'd probably be. I was like, yeah, I don't do that. I just rather get in on my own merit. It was just a weird interaction with the guy that was like, oh, if you blew somebody, you'd probably be further along. And maybe that's true. I don't know why I mentioned that, but it just made me think of that. Like, it's just fucked up. And it's fucked up to where, that women have to be put in that situation. But I think show business is a microcosm of a larger society, and women are treated bad in corporate America, and all walks of life. Obviously we just have to respect women. We have to respect each other, but you're going to see that in show business as well. And now people are getting caught out. They're getting called out, and rightfully so. I think that's what it is. I think there's anything else I wanted to say about that. Treat people right. And for the people on Facebook, on social media that are being super self-righteous, there's a tweet that somebody I'm gonna quote it. There's a who I believe is a woman. Her avatar, it's like a woman, Riley Silverman. Let me see what her. She's a comedian and writer, head writer for at IW Pod on Max Fun. Yeah, this is a woman. So. Riley Silverman, she wrote, I hate whenever someone gets named as an abuser and people pat themselves on the back for never liking them / their work to begin with. Good for you. Let me know how you feel when it is someone whose work means the world to you, or a person who does. And that puts it all into perspective. For me, it did, at least. That's a quote from a woman. There's a quote from someone else that said, that I really liked, because I looked at everything that people, this woman, Lexi Alexander, who is a Palestinian American German filmmaker, occasional troublemaker. I'm just looking at her Twitter bio. She wrote, everybody is fighting a battle they're not tweeting about. Those are two things out of a lot of the think pieces and stuff that I've read over the past 4 to 5 days, where it's just like, yeah, that kind of puts stuff into perspective. But just treat everybody right. Everybody's being super self-righteous that you're in the biz. Write your jokes. Write the jokes. Perform. Write your scripts. Do what you have to do. Be a part of the solution. Be better. Because it's getting to the point where you might have an opportunity to show what you got. And when that light gets shown on you to show what you got, show it to them. Because you show them why you deserve everything that you think you deserve. And that's one of the best ways to go about it, too. So it's just keep going. So that being said, I've blabbed enough. Let's get to Karen. Karen Morrow, man, what can I say? I've called her and Rod this the Eric and Tammy Taylor of podcasting. Just she and Rod. See, I don't want to see Rod. Rod's been on the show. And so he'll be back. But Karen, it's just been a long time coming. It's just been a long time coming to get her on the show and just like pick her brain and just have a sit down, had a chat. And she's just a sweetheart, you know, and it's just really great to hear her perspective on stuff. And she and I just sat down and talked. So this is me and the great Karen Morrow. So I'm not cutting into your Carolina Panther time, am I?
Oh, no, babe. You good.
Are they, how do you feel about them this year?
Not going to be good.
Yeah.
I personally think Cam is still injured.
Me too. Yep.
That has a lot to do with how he's been playing, and I think that Cam don't like losing, and he's a sore loser. And whenever he loses, that's when you don't get the smile and the charming aspect from him. Mm-hmm. You know. Now, what he said to that lady, that was fucked up. Mm-hmm. I'm not excusing that bullshit at all.
Me neither.
But as far as his attitude and the way he walks off and things like that, you've been quarterbacking for way too long. And sometimes it's not even a racial thing. It's about a professional thing.
Right. Do you feel like for somebody that lives there, I want your perspective on this, because I kind of feel like Carolina's not utilizing his talent. Like they're not putting anything around him. How do you feel about that?
They're not. And I felt like I've had that feeling for years. Mm-hmm. What makes me upset about the Charlotte market in particular, we want to be big city without the big city problems. Mm-hmm. Like, we want to win, but we don't want to take the chance on nobody. We don't want to take people that are flawed. We don't want to take people that have sketchy backgrounds. And I can understand, because I want to say Ray Carruth years ago, you know, and that tarnished the city bad. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people will never forget that. So they're like, nope, we don't want anybody with any background, any history. Well, okay, that's great. Particularly the Steelers. They, you know, those two or three teams run really deep here because they was the closest proximity to us. So
right.
I think, and I think for me, it frustrates me, going back to what I was talking about before, it frustrates me with the fan base here, because they're very unrealistic, and I think a lot of them are very racist. If you told them they were racist, they would tell you that they're not, but they are, because, like I said, I listen to the local things here, and I listen to what they say nationally, and I told Roger when Cam was, before Cam got drafted, I say, if this motherfucker turn around and drafts, and they don't pick Cam, I say, I won't be a Carolina Panthers fan, because that would gotta be the dumbest move ever for you to bypass him, and probably, I don't know what they thought they was going to get for him, you know, and this is just the fans talking. I don't know what they thought they were going to get for him, and you end up watching him go to another team and do what he did here. His rookie year, he broke records, like his rookie year, which he came out gangbusters breaking records. And if you would have bypassed him, he'd have went somewhere else, and you'd have seen him shine. You'd have felt like a fool. So I knew that the management had enough sense not to make that. But it's funny when it comes to the fan base, that because the thing I realized about racism is irrational and illogical. It doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't always do what's in his best interest.
Oh, just kind of like what's going on in the country on a wider scale. Mm-hmm. With the government. We'll get to that in a bit, but we're going down a path that I like, and I like to stick here. So what's your take on Josh Norman? Should they have kept him, or was he getting too big for his britches? What are your thoughts on him leaving?
To an extent, I understand. I do think that they should have paid him. Mm-hmm. Just because they underestimated the value of what he did. Mm-hmm. You know, because once he was gone, everything was a little different. You know, it's almost like as long as the car functioning, nobody pays the car attention. But when your brakes all of a sudden ain't stopping as quickly, you be like, oh, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you could have paid them for another year or two and maybe didn't got rid of them. But I think that I personally think they got rid of them too soon. But it's like it's one of those things where this was the time you decided to get rid of somebody before you had to pay them, you know, because they was going to pay him. So they opted not to. Okay, cool. But what did you have replacing him? Who did you bring up behind him? Who did he give his skills to? Nobody. Okay, then that's the problem.
Yeah. Well, let's take it on a NFL on a macro level. What are your thoughts on the things that are going on with the NFL this season? More recently, the Houston Texans owner making his inmates. Prisoners analogy. How do you feel about, like, obviously I kind of know how you feel, but I want you to just kind of speak on that. Like, just how you feel about the NFL as a whole right now.
I have a lot of things about that. As a whole, the NFL product is bad. And that's something that nobody wants to admit. It is a bad, bad product. Mm-hmm. 10 to 15 years ago it was at its height. And the reason why I said it was a bad product, why now it's a bad product, because the product are your players. Mm-hmm. You cannot work your product to death and still expect to get the same quality of product. You cannot go from once a week to twice a week to three times a week to four times a week to games overseas that nobody cares about. I'm not waking up at no 9 o'clock or 6 o'clock if I live in California getting my fantasy football schedule together for two bad teams to play across the pond. And in my opinion, it's no home advantage. I've seen those games before. Everybody got all the colors, Georgia jerseys on and shit like that. Give it up. American football is American. Football everywhere else is soccer. Soccer is king everywhere else in the world but here.
Yeah.
And Americans, in my opinion, football is not like basketball. Basketball can translate. Now, all jokes aside, basketball can translate any language. Football is not that thing. So you will never get other parts of the world to embrace American football like American, particularly North America, you know, because American football is very popular down in Mexico. That's because our proximity to them, and a lot of them are Americans. You know, a lot of them are Americans, have lived here, crossed the border, whatever it may be. Just the proximity is a lot closer than other parts of the world. So I think that overall the product is bad. Mm-hmm. Because you're working the product to death. And that's partially, I think the Players Association is weak, in my opinion. The Players Association don't really think about the players. That's because the players don't think about the players because of the mind frame that they have. I think players are getting smarter now than they used to. Mm-hmm. Used to be. Because, you know, people think athletes are just these dumb, brooding jocks who just do whatever they've been told. But now they're educating themselves and they're learning. And I think a lot of the pushback, particularly like what you were saying, he says, because we don't want these niggers or we don't want these slaves all of a sudden want rights because they have rights now. All these billions of dollars we get from all, we're going to have to cut them more and pay them more. Yes, they don't care about a fat white owner in a box that nobody knows his name. I want to see Cam Newton. I want to see Tom Brady. This is who I want to see. I want to see Odell Beckham. I don't care about you. And I think that you signed the checks, yes. And I think because they signed the checks, they think it gives them more power and authority than it really does. Because the thing is, these players, you quote unquote, are replaceable. Some of them are not. Some of them, they're just not. As much as they claim, they're just not. Yeah, you can bring them in, but guess what? It's going to take a few years before they build up to the superstar status that your players have now.
Yeah.
Some of them in the league for years. So no. Some of these players you cannot replace. I'm sorry. You know, you just can't. And also in my opinion, I know I'm kind of skipping around a little bit, but you were talking about like as a whole, so I'm gonna kind of just bounce around a little bit.
Of course. Also, that's what I want.
Something else about it is like I also have problems with the NCAA when it comes to their relationship with the NFL. you know, particularly with basketball and football, out of all the NCAA sports, they're the only two sports that you can't get paid and go semi-pro. You can't get paid and go overseas and all this other stuff without making yourself ineligible. I know the NBA has done a better job. They were like, yeah, you can go in, but guess what? You can't get an agent. Well, that defeats the purpose, in my opinion. Yeah. You know, they make it where you're 18. Well, at 18, anywhere else, any other job gives me the right to choose what I want to do. And when it comes to that, they're kids until they're no longer kids. You know, and that's why a lot of people go, well, I love college. Yeah, you love college because they're working for free. You love college because you don't feel like these black boys, you know, particularly in the black sports, you don't feel like they're men and they're demanding their worth. You know, for some reason, when black people demand their worth, white people get mad and they don't want to support the sport anymore, you know. And then not only with basketball and football, you can see the change in baseball, because all of a sudden you have brown people, you know, Hispanic and Latin descent people, all of a sudden coming up the ranks, and all of a sudden it ain't America's pastime sport no more, you know. And those are the things that I, you know, particularly pay attention to. But back to the NFL at hand, I think that, yes, the product is bad. I think that you have a lot of owners who have this master slave mentality. You think you can tell these grown ass men that making billions of dollars what to do, and they will find out pretty soon that they don't have to. I mean that you can't, because y'all all got money. You know, it's not like you're dealing with broke people, unless you're talking about people that are lower, you know, like rookies, you know, lower in the scale. But anybody that has made any form of money, no, you really can't tell them what to do. Everything is a choice. And I also think that all of the protesting and things like that that has been going on, it's real easy to protest something when the product is not good. And that's something that people don't want to admit. All the people that's talking about Kaepernick, as far as like a lot of white people, the product's not as good. So, yeah, you don't mind leaving when the product's not as good. The product was great, you wouldn't care. And a lot of the black men that are protesting, yeah, some of them are protesting for good reason, but the majority of them are only protesting because it was a black man. And how dare y'all tell a black man that he can't have a job? You can say what you want to say. You can sugarcoat it how you want to sugarcoat it. You only care because it was a black man. Because if you cared, where was your outrage with Janae Rice? You know, where was your outrage with Ben Roethlisberger being accused of raping people? Where was your thing with, you know, all the sexual abuse about wives and women and Adrian Peterson spanking his child? Where was your outrage and your anger with these other situations? You know, for a lot of people are protesting for the right reason, but a lot of people are doing this, and then they're looking at other black folks and they want to judge them if they opt to continue watching the sport. Yes, I'm continuing to watch the sport, but I've been mad about this stuff. For a lot of people, in my opinion particularly, I'm calling out black men on this, mm-hmm. because a lot of them on my Facebook and in my timeline are the most vocal. When any other time it's shut up, bitches, that we trying to watch football, I don't want to hear nothing y'all got to say. It's football time, bitch. So now all of a sudden it's football time, bitch, to y'all bitches shut up. Why y'all complaining? Yeah. You know, I stopped watching football. Why ain't you stop? Well, all of a sudden you a social justice warrior. A lot of the same things that you protest about when women talk about stuff, you know, where's your outrage when, you know, the NFL had this female counsel that all of a sudden we haven't heard a goddamn thing for? Where's your outrage then? You know, it's one of those things where when you see things and you point them out, people want to act like that's not the heart of the problem, but it is. It's the heart of the problem. A lot of people are protesting because the product is bad, and all of a sudden it hit their thing, and their thing happened to be a black man. You didn't care nothing about all these other abuses, all these other atrocities that were put against women. Those things did not matter. You didn't care that, you know, the NFL has, you know, fucked up rules when it comes to, you know, things like pocketbooks and all this shit. You know, you don't care about that. Like, yeah. with breast cancer month, you don't care about breast cancer month because most of the money they raise does not even go to breast cancer. Let's just keep that real. You just put pink on it and sell it to women with titties and go, yay, we've done something good all year, when that's not the truth.
And they ain't doing it no more. They're not even doing it anymore.
Right. Because they got called out about it. You know, let the truth be the truth. And the thing is, in my opinion too, you know, since we're going to talk about it as a whole, the NFL needs to get out of the job of policing these men. They're grown men, you know, and your job is to, as the NFL, your job is to say, okay, you turning your TVs, we're selling your product. Cool. Well, you know what? When shit go wrong, let the police do their jobs. And based off of what the police decide, then you decide about your suspensions. Then you should come in after the fact if we want to be like this. But when you got this commissioner, he came in beating his chest, blowing his horn. Yeah, I'm going to put these niggas in their place. Because that's why he got the job. I'm just going to keep it real. I'm going to put these boys in their place. Mm-hmm. And when you do that and you fuck up, that's on you. It's on you. Okay? Versus if you'd had a committee and said, okay, we'll run things through this committee, and based off of what the committee decides, I'll make a choice. Based off of that. You didn't want to do that. You wanted to be the principal of a league of grown-ass men. This makes no sense. Because now people are more concerned about how many gains they're going to get versus if they really committed a crime and should they go to jail and be punished for their crime. Gains count more than crime. That makes no sense in my mind. You know, and those are things that I've been mad about for a long time. Kaepernick didn't have nothing to do with that, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You know,
no, he didn't.
So, right. So if you were going to be mad, I need to see your outrage a while ago. And these are things that I know some people have been mad about the whole time. Please don't get me wrong. But I realized that a lot of people didn't opt or choose to be vocal until it came to Cap.
Right. Right. Now, knowing what you know and everything that you've said so eloquently, does that make it hard for you, even though you still watch? Does it make it hard for you to watch the games? Like, does it just knowing what you know? Is it just like, does it bum you out at all?
No, because truth be told, everybody watches something that's problematic. Everybody does.
Yeah.
No matter what art form or form of entertainment you consume, everybody has their thing that's quote unquote problematic. Mm. Okay. Everybody. But what I don't do is that I try my best not to judge. You know, there are some things I will judge you on. You know, I'm not even going to lie. Like R. Kelly, yeah, I'm judging you with R. Kelly. He's a known pedophile. Yes,
yeah.
I will judge you on that. Like, I do got my lines. But overall, no, I don't judge people. And that's what my problem is because, you know, a lot of these people that's coming out with this protest, they want to sit on a high horse. Well, your morals are no better than mine, baby. The product is bad. Let's just admit that the product is good. It isn't good. So this is a great time to never to jump the ship when the product isn't at the top that it should be. But no, I don't have any problem watching, and I will continue to watch until it's not any fun for me. When it's not any fun, I'll leave too.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, I would rather talk to you than really watch. I mean, Red Zone, I'm not going to lie to you, Karen. Red Zone is on mute currently right now, but it's just kind of been background noise for the past few years. And like last week, I didn't watch any football and I felt okay. Like I didn't mind it. But now basketball, for one thing, the NBA is just so much better for me. Even though there's only about four or five teams that are competing for a championship, it still manages to be fun. I don't know how do you think, what do you think those differences are with the, like, with the NBA? What makes the NBA so much more fun? I think you like the NBA, right?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. The structures are very different. The thing about the NBA, in my opinion, the NBA, the players are allowed to be more vocal and speak out about a lot of things. The NFL is about the shield. Shield comes first, mm-hmm. over everything. And I think that that hurts them to an extent because you're never allowed to be individuals. NBA, you're allowed to be more individuals. But the NBA has always been my heart. I was an NBA player way before I became a football player. Yeah, I mean, not a football player, but a football fan. Lover, and, gotcha. You know, fan. And
you grew up with Larry Johnson, Dale Curry, probably.
Yes, right. Larry Johnson, Dale Curry. Kobe still hurt because we actually drafted Kobe. Because it went from the Hornets to the Bobcats back to the Hornets, you know, so I've lived in the back and forth and it was hilarious when we were the Bobcats because everybody still called them the Hornets, so I'm glad we finally got the name the Hornets back. Even the announcers, they've been announced for years, but like the Hornets, I'm like, yeah, we've been that team for 20-some years. I can understand you keep calling us that. So that was a little phase, and I'm glad it went away. I personally think that there's a big difference. I think that, in my opinion, football is faster paced. Basketball is a faster paced game. In my opinion, it's a lot more enjoyable right now to football. I root for like this. I'm like Issa Rae. I root for all the black people when it comes to basketball.
Yeah.
So I cheer for players and not teams.
Me too.
And I guess I've been like that about sports for a very long time. Because I know, well, my understanding, I've never been a professional athlete, but you know, being an athlete in this country, particularly at this climate, has got to be hard. Because you were already dealing with a lot of racism and things like that. But prior to social media, now fans can actually hit you up directly. Your Instagram, your Facebook, your Twitter, your Tumblr. Like, you have more fans that have immediate access to you. And that makes a big difference. I think in the NBA, a lot of players are more outspoken on social things. Which is what I really like. It's not required of everybody, but I like that some players opt and choose to exercise that, and the NBA allows them to. Now, the NBA has had his problems before with the old Commissioner Stern. He was a mess too. But I do think that the NBA is going in more of the right direction. I think that a lot more people are actually looking back towards the NBA because a lot of people are like, I'm not, particularly with NFL, I'm not allowing my child to go out there and get hurt. Not that you can't get hurt in the NBA, mm-hmm. but your contract's guaranteed. So you will make your money. You know, you'll get paid. They have to pay you. Like it's just a big difference in the two sports.
Right. Now, this is something that I've been thinking about. Like, Rod and I talked about it, like, maybe a little bit, but I kind of want your take on, and I know you guys probably talked about it on your show, how do you feel about the Lonzo LeVar Ball thing? Like, part of me, like, it just seems like players are trying to go after him more because of his dad. And, like, it's just, I don't know. It's kind of it's just kind of weird to me how I kind of like get mad. It's like, okay, this dad, he's a bit of a blowhard, but it's not that serious. But I think the media is trying to, I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot of hypocrisy going on when it comes to LeVar. Cause it's like, okay, you're putting the camera in his face all the time, but then you don't like him.
Right. You know, it's one of those things where the media can be his own worst enemy, mm-hmm. you know, because, yeah, he's loud, you know, but being black, you know, a lot of black people like that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of white people don't know black people like that, you know. So for the first time, a lot of them are getting introduced to the loud ass old man that sits in the corner of the shop all day and never gets a haircut. He knows everybody. He daps all the young bucks up. But all he does is sit there and argue about Kobe, argue about Michael Jordan, argue about Shaq and whoever else. And all the new players is trash. Like, that's what them old black men do, you know. And I think for the first time, the general population, which is white folks, is like, oh, okay, yeah, he loud, you know. But they don't feel relieved. This is just the shit he does.
Yeah.
Like, and you never going to stop him from doing that. Of course he going to think his son is the best shit ever. Of course, that's his child, yeah. You know. But thing is that if you're going to deal with his child, you're going to deal with him. But also, the son at some period of time is going to have to make a decision. And do I want to deal with my daddy? And have him, I don't care. Do I put like this? Do I want to deal with my daddy? Do I want to have a team deal with my daddy? You know, or do I step in and be like, hey, daddy, chill out? You know, it's all up to him. But also, he's grown, but he's also a child. That's also his daddy. So people act like that relationship ain't real.
Yeah. Because part of me feels like the more that the NBA can become like pro wrestling, the better it is. Like players talking shit about each other. like it being like in good nature, the better it is. You know, like if Draymond Green talks about Bradley Beal or something, to where for the most part, granted they fought, but I don't know. It's just like we just say, I think their team sucks. We want to beat them, as opposed to just, oh, have all this decorum. We're going to play as good as we can to try to beat them. It's entertainment. Like it's yes, entertainment. It is. And part of me feels like, God forbid, like, because it seems like LeVar Ball, he said some questionable shit. He said some shit that wasn't right. With the white girl, white lady, he shouldn't have said some of the things. Go ahead.
Right. And a lot of times, like I said, particularly being a woman, I've admitted this on my own show, I'm very, 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 very sensitive to things that affect women. A women, because I'm black and I'm a woman, mm-hmm. and how black men respond to things actually affect me directly, indirectly, whether brothers want to believe it or not. So when ashy ass niggas go on here and defend this dude, he was wrong.
Yeah.
He was wrong. And I don't support black no matter what. Don't get it twisted.
I
will support you if you're right, but just because you're black don't make you right. Skin folks ain't kin folk, and people need to remember that. But also, we also live in a patriarchal society, so you have these dudes who just support other dudes no matter how they treat women, no matter how they treat their kids, no matter what, just because, you know, we both got dicks, but, you know, you can still oppress within an oppressive group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think other than those, like, those indiscretions and those things where he fucked up on, it just seems like he's decent. Like he feeds other kids and stuff and he coaches.
Yeah.
It just seems like he's okay.
He's just the top person, in my opinion. He just had this over the top personality. Yeah. And guess what? You deal with his sons, because he got two or three. You deal with his sons, you're going to deal with them. And that's something that they're going to have to deal with.
It's going to be for the next 20 years, probably.
Right. So unless, you know, something happens where he personally decides, which he's not going to, sounds like, unless something that he personally decides to change, yeah. If a team opts to deal with that child, they're going to have to deal with that daddy.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell them. You know what I'm saying? Like, yay, you know, not unless one of the children be like, nah, daddy, I'm doing this on my own. Even that, you're still going to deal with the daddy.
Right. So let's move on from that to sports. I didn't expect us to talk about sports that much, but so be it. It was good and I liked it. I've been asking a lot of the people of color, or most people that have been on the show this year, what's Trump's America been like for you? Like 10 months in, what's it been like? Almost 11 months in. What's it been? How are you feeling?
I'm at a better place now than I initially was.
Okay. And why is that? How are you initially, and why do you feel better now?
I've come, put like this. Initially, I'm not even going to lie. People joke about me in the 53%, but that's real. Mm-hmm. And particularly when it comes to white women, I was like, fuck all y'all. Mm-hmm. I was mad. I was highly upset. I knew white men weren't going to make a difference. I just gave up on that particular group of people. But, you know, when it comes to white women, and particularly the older I got, the more I started learning about feminism and black feminism and things like that, and the divides and the differences and things like that. And, you know, particularly the day after the election, you know, you had the pink pussy hat march. And I was like, fuck all y'all bitches, because y'all out here, and I know y'all voted for him. Y'all voted for him because he would not have won if he didn't. You know, he was grabbing y'all by the pussies, not us, dog, y'all. And I think I was very mad. I was very upset. I was very bitter. I was very angry. I was really, really sad, somewhat depressed. I would wake up and just have anxiety, you know, thinking what a fucked up world this is, because white people got so mad that a nigger was in office that they couldn't look past that nigger to understand that he actually cared about this country as a whole. he was actually trying to benefit them. All these policies and procedures and shit that he was laying down was for their benefit too. But that boils back to the thing I said before. The thing about racism, racism is irrational. Racism is illogical. Racism does not care about even the protection of its own. Racism only cares about whiteness, particularly because I'm talking about like racism for the white people. And what I realized with this, particularly poor white people, they really make me laugh because y'all need help more than any other group of people because as percentage-wise, y'all are on welfare more than we are. You get more government assistance than any other group because you're more of the population right now. You know, those numbers are starting to decline, but you're more of the population. So you voting against your own interests is your fault. I had got to the point where my compassion ran out. I didn't give a fuck about none of these articles with the white folks talking about, oh, I didn't know. I was like, fuck you. This is your fault. I mean, I was just mad, like literally just mad at the world that people could be so idiotic and so stupid that they allowed racism and sexism and misogyny to prevent this country from going in a better place, you know. And also, I look at the LGBTQ people. A lot of them folks voted for Trump, particularly the white people voted for Trump. And all he did was erase all your rights. You know, like these are the things that me as a black woman look at, because what I've realized, and I've told Roger about this, black women are superheroes. The reason why I say we're superheroes, black women are the only group of people that has to look at other people and say, I got to fight for your rights too. No other group of people says, I got to fight for your rights too. Everybody else is looking out for their own. Black women go, okay, I got to fight for my kids. I got to fight for my man. But you know what? I got to fight for these other black people too. I might not be poor, but I got to fight for impoverished people too. You know, I might not be locked up, but I got to fight for your rights too. Black women are the only group of people. We have to consider other people because as a whole, if everybody benefits, black women benefits in conjunction to that. That's the thing. What people better realize, if black men are in a good place in this country, black women indirectly benefit from that. You know, because for black women as a whole, particularly straight black women as a whole, when black men aren't doing good, overall, we're not doing good. Yes, we're the highest educated, make them up. But overall, we love our black men. We love them. Regardless of who we marry, we love our black men and we love our black children. So I'm thinking about the future. I'm thinking about how fucked up it's going. But like, I had a zillion things. Just me personally. I can't speak for nobody that's going through my mind. Right. And now I'm to the place where I'm better, still mad, still angry. Not the wound ain't as fresh. But oh, that anger, I think I'm going to live with it for the rest of my life. I'm not going to lie, because I think that putting Trump in office change the course of American history forever. Mm-hmm. You can't tell me any difference. America will never, internationally and across the world, we are a fucking laughingstock because he's a goddamn idiot and he had no reason getting motherfucking voted in, you know. But we got what we deserve. Why? Because we have a bunch of white folks that are idiots and dumbasses that was like racism over everything. Because after he got in office, what ramped up? Racism. What ramped up? Blackface. What ramped up? Make America Great. What ramped up? Tiki Torch rallies. That shit ramped up. Because it's always been here. It has always been here. But when you put a racist in office, all you tell them is it's okay to be racist and come out the closet. What ramped up, KKK? All this shit ramped up. And that shit is real to me because to me it's life and death. You know, white people take it as a joke, but to me, it's life and death. You know, I'm worried, hey, if I walk out my door, let's say I get in an accident, I don't know if you KKK member decided to blow my brains out and you hit me. I don't know. I don't know if I'm walking down the street and you decide today is the day that you decide that you've had enough of niggas oppressing you and I get shot. I don't know. And so, hey, like I said before, it caused a real bad fear, real bad panic. Now I'm to the point where I'm at acceptance with a lot of shit. And I'm to the point where I tell people, I say, oh, nothing's changed. Democrats didn't learn. We still got motherfucking Bernie Sanders that everybody want to hail as the best shit ever. He needs to go somewhere and sit his old ass down, in my opinion. So when you still got white folks taunting him out there and everybody want to talk about Hillary, you know what they're not talking about? Voter suppression, which made a big difference. You know what they're not talking about? Gerrymandering. These are the shit. Nobody is talking about this, but Barack Obama, and he's not even running in office anymore. He's the person talking about this, trying to address this shit, raise money for this. And, you know, and I'm supposed to believe we're supposed to win again. No, if Trump is not impeached, and I don't think he's going to get in the preach, we're going to get another 4 years of him. We're going to get a total of 8 years of him.
You really think it's going to be eight?
I believe that in all my heart. If he does not get impeached, I'm going to tell you why. Because white people have got emboldened. And in the House and the Senate, he lets them do whatever the fuck they want to do. They're cutting taxes. They're cutting food stamps. They're doing shit that they've always wanted to do. But Barack Obama stood in the way and says, I'm not allowing you to do this. But Trump is an idiot, and he allows them to do whatever they want to, cutting all kind of social services and all that stuff, giving everything back to the states and shit like that. There's some shit that needs to be federal. Federal. They got to be. Because white people are racist. White people in America are racist. And that's something that we need to accept. White people as a whole TM, individually, no, you might not be racist. But white people as a group, a record level in a crew, is motherfucking racist. And I live down south. And I know if some of these fools had their way, I would be picking cotton again. And I'm just going to keep that real. If they had their way. So I'm like, hey, I don't want to go back. And I refuse to go back. I still got family members that were here doing the Jim Crow laws. I still got family members that can tell me about segregated bathrooms. I got family members that were in high school here in Charlotte Mecklenburg school systems when we integrated and used to tell me how they used to be scared to go to school and have nights because they was like, they didn't know if they were going to get jumped. I got family members that talks about the buses going by them down in Waynesboro, North Carolina, and the kids would spit at them and throw rocks at them. This is the shit that I deal with. And I got family members that live with this. Yes, I'm going to be mad, and yes, I'm going to be angry and upset because it's not fucking history to me. This ain't old news to me. This is not something you can watch over the bridge because you live in other parts of the country that you think isn't racist. Bullshit. Up north, stop and frisk. That wasn't down south, but guess what? That was a racist policy that they put in place to stop and frisk black people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's everywhere. Like up north, they have certain areas, segregated areas. Like here, we don't have Chinatown and like Asian town. We're not segregated like this. We were forced to live together, but it's still racist. It's racist up there too. But a lot of times I think people get on their high horses and nobody cares about racism until it starts knocking at their doors.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's, I mean, it's in the workplace. It's in corporate America. It's just like the stuff that's been said about like the, you know, sports we were talking about. It just shows you how much they hate us. Like they don't like us, and it's just
right.
It just seems like it's just been enhanced even since Obama was in office. Like I would have the conversation with my dad a lot of times where I'd say, God, doesn't it seem like racism's gotten worse since he's been in office? And it's not his fault that, you know, but it just seems like that's part of the backlash too, where it's like this upheaval of racism and all that stuff. But yeah, it's just
right.
It's hard to not be angry. It's hard to
right.
Not, yeah, it's hard to not think when someone says sideways shit to you and they're white that you're like, is this motherfucker racist? Like,
right.
Like,
so
I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that person. But shit kind of sounds
right.
Racist. Yeah.
Right. And I think in my heart of hearts, Chris, I had to check myself. I had to check my compassion, I had to check my empathy, and I had to check my sympathy because it was running low and it was running low fast. All jokes aside, I mean, I was about to tap the tank out. You know, I had to kind of get my mind right and get things together because, like you said, who wants to live in a country where you know that the people that live here hate you and people act like that reality does not mentally and physically affect you? That's why black people have a higher heart attack rate, blood pressure rate, you know, a lot of black people have PTSD and shit like that. Like this shit is real, you know? And I think for me, America, the foundation of America is slavery.
Right.
And we never dealt with or apologized or got 40 acres and a mule or ever acknowledged slavery. You want to erase that textbooks, you know, shit like that matters. And the foundation of this country is racism. Y'all came here and wiped out the Native Americans. You're talking about the Trail of Tears. So, yes, I do believe because racism is so rooted in the hatred for others, for a lot of white people, them others, is so rooted you know, but yes, I could see us doing this because what I realized, like I say, when it comes, particularly when it comes to poor white people and black people are on the same boat. Mm-hmm. I have a high school, I mean, I have a college degree. My college degree and a white person high school diploma, we make the same amount of money, dog. Mm. But you didn't go to college, but we make the same amount of money. So in certain situations, I'm going to keep that real. Education don't even make a difference. People don't want to admit that. Hey, you just because you got educated, you might make a little bit more. But guess what? Whiteness in our country benefits just off of whiteness. And that's the reality that, you know, some people don't want to accept. Either, no matter how hard you work, how much education you have, at the end of the day, a lot of people will still look at you as a nigger. And that's something that people don't want to admit either, in my opinion. And so, yes, because of all those things I said, yes, if Trump does not get impeached, and I hope it's sad, but I'm like, at least he's a fucking idiot. If you get Pence in there, it's going to be really bad because he believes this shit. And he's not as dumb as Trump. And he will pass a lot of shit overnight. And you won't hear about shit until it's actually passed and in laws. He ain't going to be tweeting and Facebooking and posting. All of a sudden, you're going to be like, hey, nobody got a right. She's like, what the fuck happened? They'll be like, yeah, they was in the private session and nobody was invited to. You know, no media, nobody. He's smart. He's intelligent. He's strategic. Trump is not. Trump has a lot of ego. Let's just keep that real. Trump wants to be seen. And actually, in my opinion, with Trump, put it like this. Trump looks at Barack Obama and he wants to be better than him. He will never be better than him because his money can't buy Barack Obama. He can't buy the excellence.
Right.
You know, he can't buy, you know, the pride that the country had in him, particularly black people and brown people. He can't purchase these things because his money has bought him everything. He can't buy these things. And it bothers him that he can't buy these things. So that jealousy irks up and his ego raises up and he said, well, since I can't buy it, I'm going to erase everything about you.
Yeah. Well, Karen, how did we get to, how did you get to be this compassionate, super passionate person? Where did it start for you? Where'd you grow up? You grew up in Charlotte, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was born in Albany, New York.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I was born 1979, April the 2nd, 1979. I was born in Albany, New York. And my biological mother, she was mentally ill, so she couldn't take care of me. But her sister, that's who I call mama. Okay. My mama's oldest sister, who was technically my mama. Uh-huh. When she was about 40 years old, she was like, because the family had basically, they got the paperwork together, and they was like, well, we wanted to get her. And so my mom was like, no. I want her to know her family. So she left Charlotte, came up there and got me. And I've been with my mama ever since. My mama's due down here in Charlotte. Yeah. And so I think being raised by older parents is a big generational gap. And my mama, real old school. She was meant to be seen and not heard. I love her. I love her.
Yeah.
But I know that some of the quote unquote old school ways is it conducive to children all the time, and it penalizes children and, you know, make children feel less than and a lot of things. And I think that because when I was a child, I was never heard. And, you know, I was always like, shh, be quiet, go somewhere, sit down. You know, a lot of the creative side was never pushed or a coached or kind of brought out of me. When you're dealing with me, because my mama, she had two other daughters, and out of the three of us, I'm not her biological daughter, but she calls me a child. Out of all three of us, I was the first one because I'm the only one to go to school and graduate and all that stuff. So, and as far as I'm concerned, I was first generation, quote unquote, you know, to go to school and get an education. I think in school, once I got there, because it's hilarious, I've actually gotten better. I used to be a really loud person. I was loud because I'm like, hey, you're going to hear me. But Roger has told me that, hey, you can tone it down and people can still hear you. Because I'm like, no, they're going to hear me. He says, yes, they can hear you, but you ain't got to scream at them. So I've kind of, because my volume used to always be on 10. I used to be like a really just unnecessarily loud person. So I've kind of toned that down and I've learned how to, what I did, when you have a parent, and I love my mama now, but when you have a parent that does not know how to deal with emotions, they can't teach you how to deal with your emotions.
Yeah.
So children are irrational and illogical with emotions, and they don't know how to balance that out. Once I learned how to balance out those emotions and realize it's okay to feel these things, you just have to learn how to take that energy and put it in a positive thing. So I think for me, learning how to take those feelings of anger and sadness and bitterness and even some points hatred, and learning how to take those things and make something positive out of those things, and allowing myself to feel those emotions. It's okay to feel these things, because as Black people, we are not taught that it's okay to feel. We are, particularly Black women, you got to be strong. But just because you're strong don't mean you ain't hurting. Just because you're strong don't mean your heart ain't broken. You know, just because you're strong don't mean, you know, somebody ain't done you wrong. Just because I put this face on don't mean there's things that I'm hiding from you to protect you, you know, from how I really feel, you know. And so, you know, I've just kind of learned how to balance, you know, those things out. And also, I think that I've always been a passionate child, you know, just a really, really passionate, and I'm a talkative child, as anybody listening can tell. I love to talk.
What kind of things were you, did you feel like you were angry and bitter about? Like, was it just like the whole tough love thing that you were going through as a child? Like, did you ever think about your biological mom? Because I saw, like, you maybe a month or two ago, you posted some pictures of your biological mom and your
yes.
family. Where is she? Is she in Albany? Is she in New York still? Or
yeah, she's in Schenectady.
Oh shit! I love, you know, like, some of my best gigs are where I really got to grow as a comic, thanks to these guys, Tom Lewis and Ethan Ullman. They have a bunch of shows. I did a bunch of shows in Schenectady and Albany, so I'm very familiar with it. It's like an hour and a half, probably like 2 hours away from where I live, and I love it up there.
So because like I said, I've never been there before, but I know that that's the name of the, she's in that general area.
Okay. Yeah.
And most of my life, she's been in like a halfway house or some form of that. And I've seen her before, but I know I haven't seen her in many, many years. And a lot of it, put it like this, as you get older and you make more money, you can afford things. Now, you know, eventually I told Roger, we'll get to the point where we're making more money or we can go see her. But before, I couldn't afford it. It's expensive to fly up there and fly back and get hotel rooms and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That's one good thing. Being older, you make more money, but you can do some of these things that your heart desires. Because I haven't seen my mama since I've been 16.
Wow.
My biological mother since I've been 16.
That's gotta suck though, right? Even though you're living a good life, like, I don't know what that's like. So, and I feel like my life, I think I've been pretty fortunate. And when I think about my parents not having these people that are my beacon and my rock, and I think about somebody not having that, it's like, fuck, how does that make you feel? You know, like, even because you are a very strong person. Like, I call you, and there's got to be a Black equivalent, but I call you and Rod, I call you and Rod the Eric and Tammy Taylor of podcasting. Because I can't, you've heard me say that before, but I can't find, it's something else there. It's something Black, but like, for now, it just fits. Cause like, they're just like this, they're just like solid. And it's just like that's who they were. And they were, you know, like, just good, wholesome people. So that's how I feel about you. And I feel about Rod, but like, even though you're this pillar of a person, how does it like suck, or like, I mean, what is it? How do you carry that?
No, it doesn't. Several things. I think for me, I remember you had asked me about, you know, all these range of emotions I was feeling. I think growing up as a child, when I was younger, you know, how you used to have like your PTAs and, you know, played in the band and a band, and I did concert band and, you know, things like that. And my mama, since it was just me and her, a lot of times she had to work 2 and 3 jobs most of my life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of events she couldn't be at, you know, but I did have family members and Roderick's family, you know, things like that to come around. Like, it'd be times we have Thanksgiving events and she couldn't be there because she was working. And like, those things used to really, really get to me. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was younger, I used to be very angry because, you know, you see people with, you know, the mother and the father,
yeah,
and the child, mm-hmm. you know, and it would just be me and my aunt and, or me and one of her daughters, you know, or so, who I call aunt, you know, because, you know, my cousins call them aunt. So actually, my cousins actually call both my older cousin aunts because, you know, their children called each other, called them aunts, so they're aunts to me, too.
Gotcha.
And so when you would see these things, I used to be very mad and very angry and very bitter because I wanted the traditional family because, you know, you came from somewhere, right. You know, and I think for me, I don't know who my biological daddy is because you couldn't get information out of my mama, mm-hmm. you know? And so I don't know anything about that side. I don't know if he had other kids. I don't ever think, nope, have I met my, no, I'll never think I met his mother, any of them. So to me, it was like a empty hole in my heart for years. Mm-hmm. But what I've learned, and I think as I've gotten older, an absent parent is not always a bad thing.
Right.
Because it's a lot of people who got two parents that sometimes they wish they'd been better off with them not in their lives. So I had to get older to realize that because people take for granted that just because you had two functioning parents that were halfway decent and actually loved and cared about you, it's a lot of people that got parents, they're abusive, they're on alcohol, they're on drugs, mm-hmm. you know, all types of things. So for the fact that I had to learn that to appreciate the people that love me.
Right.
It's hard for a child to get to that understanding. And once I got to that point, it made life easier. And once I got to the point in my life that I understand that my life is like it is so that I could get a true understanding of who I am. The reason why I said this is because this, I realized this as I've gotten older, everything that I've been through has a purpose. You know, everybody feels different about that, but I think everything I've been through had a purpose. Every heartache, every tear, every downfall, every disappointment, it had a purpose. And also I think that everybody at some point in their lives has been through a journey that when they share with somebody else, they'd be like, dog, I felt that way too. Or, hey, I've been there too. Or, wow, I thought I was alone. Mm-hmm. And so I'm to the point where I feel like my journeys in life are not only for me, but some of them are designed to share with other people, you know? So it's particularly doing podcasting. That's an outlet. I think podcasting really made me learn that I'm not alone in life.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes sharing stories help people heal. You know, people better realize that because once you're on the other side and you're talking to somebody, they might actually be going through something that you've already been on the other side. So you can let them know that it does get better. You know, you can let them know it's not always like this. You know, you can let them know, you know, that you do care and you do love them and you do support them. Because something else, too, is that I've learned how to be a cheerleader.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you can only be a cheerleader if you know how to cheer. And I don't know if I sound silly, but I know how to cheer for people. And I don't mean trying to get something out of you. I don't ever have an ulterior motive. I'm cheering. I'm rooting for you.
Yeah.
So you as an individual person, I'm rooting for you, you know. And when I tell people that I care about them, you know, when I love, I mean these things. Right. And I love you and I have this caring and kindness in my heart. I mean these things. And I think it's weird because the way society is now, a lot of people look at me and Roderick, and I know it got to be a generational thing, Chris. A lot of people think we pretend. No, this is us. Like anybody would tell you, including you, if you meet us in real life, what you hear across the microphone is the same thing you're going to get if you sit down at dinner with us.
Yeah, right.
Oh, you're not going to get a personality. You're not going to get a I'm on and off. No, I'm on all the time, quote unquote, because this is who I am.
Yeah, because when we met in person, it was the same. It was just the same. Like when you guys came up to, I guess it up or down for you guys to Durham, when you guys came to that Chris Hardwick show, it was just like, these are my friends. Like I had probably been talking to you guys for like 5 or 6 years or something like that. Like when, God, it had to be at least like what, 2008 or
it's
9?
Been a while. Oh yeah, we've known you for a many years, and yeah. The thing about it is that particularly, I'm not even gonna lie, and I know we got other comedian friends. Yeah.
I was the first.
But particularly when it comes to you, you have a special place in the heart.
Thank you.
Because it was one of those things where when we went to go see you, it meant something to us. Not that it doesn't mean nothing when we go to other people. I think, yeah, you were the first one we actually went and actually saw. And because we've seen your growth, if that makes sense. We've seen you. I'm going to keep it real, Chris. We've seen you become more confident. Because at first you would come on the show. We'd be like, hey, most of your stuff. You'd be like, yeah, you know, y'all want to come check. We'd be like, dog, you got a product, sell it. You know, so I can tell, like, as you got that confident up, as you begin to build your skill, as you become to get better in your craft, as you grew professionally and personally, that all rolled into your comedy. And it's a beautiful thing to actually watch people grow in whatever way they're going to blossom into it. And the thing is, I, with all my heart, the best is yet to come for you. I really do believe that. You have great things in the future for you. I really do believe that with all my heart, because you're great. You're wonderful at what you do. And
can't
I think
stop trying to make me cry on my own podcast.
No, that's all right, baby.
I'm not
but I
let
really
you do that. But yeah,
I really do believe that, you know. And there's a lot of comedians that have connections with us, but it's a joy and an honor to even get to know a lot of these people, because it's been amazing to watch people travel all over the world and, you know, do these great things. And even though sometimes I might not always reach out and say things, I tell people I'm always rooting for you. Even if I don't say anything, I'm always rooting for you. And to me, you know, watching your podcast and watching it grow and watching your fan base grow and watching you become more confident in these various different areas, that means a lot to me. That's why when you asked me, I'm like, sure, I'll come. I was like, hey, I get to be on the podcast. I've been so excited about this. I know Roger has been on, but I was like, hey, because you know what? Y'all, me and Roger ain't the same person. I don't know why people think that's hard. You know, we don't always got together as a combo.
Yeah, I just, I think for me, like, it was just like a matter of just like trying to figure out how I wanted to approach it. Like I've been like, just like even with your show and the subject matter that you and Rod talk about, it's just try to be more like Felder. Michael Felder was on the show a couple weeks ago, and we were just, we were talking, like the first part of the show, we were talking about what Cam said to the reporter and how like just the current times that we're in, is just to make sure that, okay, am I following enough women on Twitter? Am I listening to different podcasts? Am I listening to the perspectives of women? I've never felt threatened by women, because that's, most of the time women have just been in my life as authority figures, just like in elementary school, black principal, black teachers, black, you know, female teachers. So I was never like, bosses have been women, so it's just never the thing to me where it's like, why is this woman in here? But I wanted to have more perspectives on the show, and it was just like a lot, like there are quite a few people that was just like a long time coming for them being on the show, so I didn't want you to feel like slighted or anything like that.
Oh no, I'm that's the thing, I never feel slighted or anything like that. I'm just, you know, cause a lot of times I'm just excited, you know, and because the thing is, I know it's a running joke, but shout out to my secretary, Roger, because the thing is, like, I work like, not so, I work like 3 jobs. So I'm constantly going, constantly working, you know, yeah. We're starting to travel more.
Yeah.
and do it. And that's why people hit me up. I'm like, hey, hit the secretary up.
Well, that's why. Yeah, because when I hit you up, you're like, oh, talk to Rod. I was like, okay, all right. He's your booker. But one of the things I was thinking about, like your show, and I just kind of want to get under the hood of that a little bit. But with the show, like the Black Guy Who Tips was something that just kind of grounded me and made me feel connected to the community, to just some even though I'm not seeing these people all day, but you guys introduced me to a bunch of different and interesting people that kind of held me up, you know, where when there were times when I felt alone, like I'm embarking on this journey of doing stand up and trying to carve a way in the show business. And there were people like, you know, like Brandon, Where's My 40 Acres crew, that I could come on and have dialogue with people about stuff. Can I credit like you and Rod and Bomani for that, to like opening up that network? And it's just people that have, you know, if you talk about like the Bill Parcells coaching tree of all like the great coaches that come under him, Belichick and all the, you know what I mean? Like, that's kind of how, yep, I feel about you guys. But I want to talk to Rod about this, but I think it's important, and I think it's more important to get your perspective on it, with how the show started, how it evolved, and how you push Rod to the next level. Like, because I think a lot of times you always hear the behind every great man, there's a great woman. But can you speak on maybe just kind of give an overview of how the show started, and then just really kind of get into the meat and potatoes about pushing him to the next level, to go premium and to make the show a full-time thing. So I just kind of want to give you like an area to just kind of move around in with that question.
Okay. I think for the Black Guy Who Tips was initially was all right. Mm-hmm. It was a blog, like a blog post. I forgot, what was it? MySpace or something. He used to write posts about it on MySpace. And then I think he went to like a site or something with it, and you know, people would tell him that this stuff was funny. He was posting on Facebook and things like that. And I think me and Roger both fans of Keith and the Girl.
Yes.
And so Keith and him though were just literally two regular people. I think she was a clown. I think they both were clowns. That's right. They both used to be clowns.
Oh wow.
Professional clowns. And yeah, because they both used to actually go together to be clowns. And then, you know, Keith Keith had always been a comedian. Now, you know what I mean? Like some form of comedian. Now Hemda is actually a comedian too.
Okay.
And so Roger was like, hey, they're two normal people. And one day they was talking on the show, and, you know, they was talking about, you know, telling people, hey, you know, you can do this too, you know. And I think somebody had wrote in about, you know, their show or something like that. They were like, hey, if you think that, you know, you can do a better job than us, you know, why don't you start your own show? Why don't you do it? And that was kind of sparked something within Roderick to start the show. And when he initially came to me, I was like, hey, I don't know nothing about that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I really was looking at him like, I mean, if you say so. And then I didn't know if podcasting had rules. There was any regulations to it? Could you cuss? Could you not cuss? What could you talk about? Because we were talking about, like, now it's a lot easier to start a podcast. Then it was not as easy,
right,
to actually get a podcast up and running. And I think, you know, from that, his relationship with Chris, his relationship with Brandon kind of started, you know, during that particular time frame. I think he was actually a fan of Where's My 40 Acres? And I think, you know, that first show was hilarious, though. We literally, what was it, 3-4 times? Because I think the computer crashed. We had the wrong type of cord. Like, by the time we recorded, it was like midnight. We had been to Best Buy like 4 or 5 times. So that first show was, it was a doozy. And I think that as we began to do the show, and I remember telling Ronjik, I said, you know what, I'm a good substitute, and I was like, hey, if you ever want to get somebody, I'll work behind the scenes. And the show is also called The Black Guy Who Tips and not called The Rod and Karen Show, because Roger was like, I'm not sure, because he asked me, I was like, I don't even know if this is something I want to do. So that's literally why it's called The Black Guy Who Tips. We all black who tip, but that's why it's not called The Rod and Karen Show or whatever. But I actually do like the name, because the name is actually a litmus test. You know, because you see that, you know somebody black going to be there. Ain't no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And I know for some people, because of the name, it's a turnoff, so be it. But we're always going to be true to ourselves, you know, when it comes to that. And I think, excuse me, when you're talking about our Roderick and the premium things, boy, we've been, I didn't realize, we've been doing this show, what, since 2010? Yeah, 2010. 9, 10, somewhere around in there.
Yeah.
And so when Roderick has been laid off 2 times, yeah, he's been laid off twice. The first time he got laid off from his first job, and then that's when, I think after he got laid off, the first time we increased the days. I think because when we first started, we used to do once a week, and then we went to twice a week. And then as more people started writing in and feedback, and that's how we got the Saturday show 3 times a week. Mm-hmm. And as this last time he got laid off from his job, because we had been talking about doing premium a while, like literally there's things that are happening now that we really talked about years before. But let's just keep it real. When I'm working 40 hours a week, he's working 40 hours a week. Like by the time you come home, you're tired, you're exhausted. Like, it's hard to pull the energy. You know, that's why people that podcast and have 40-hour job a week, I understand that, because it is a lot. And so after when he got laid off, right, he got severance. So he had a certain period of time where the severance ran out. And I was like, now was the time. Because I'm tech savvy, but I'm not that tech savvy. And I told him, I say, I don't know how to do it. I don't know where to start, but I know you can. You know, I know that you have the ability to find out how to make a premium, how to, you know, do, because Roger built the site by itself. So all that's him. So I pushed him and I encouraged him to do it. And I know a lot, very stressful. It was a lot to go behind that. You know, there was glitches and bugs and things like that. You know, when we first started, things are automated now, which makes it a lot simpler than manually doing certain things. And I've always believed in the vision and the dream of what we do, because everybody's different. But I can truly say I've always been a dreamer. Roderick's been a realistic, almost a pragmatic person. Mm-hmm. But we balance, me and Roderick balance each other out. I'm always in the clouds. He's always on the ground. Mm-hmm. But periodically, he'll pull me down and say, okay, we can't do that yet, but we can do this. And I'm like, okay, cool. Then I'm looking at him like, dog, you need to come on, raise that ground level up a little bit. So it's like he's kind of pulling me down to reality, and I'm pulling him up to allow him to see the things that I'm seeing sometimes.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how we balance each other out, because I know it's a running joke for Roger, but Roger living his white woman of color life, I love it. I'm here for it, because he's opening up to new things. You know, I'm an extrovert.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm full of energy. I'm bubbly. That's just me. You know, regardless if it's an intimate crowd, if it's a big crowd, that's just who I am. Roger's an introvert. So he can deal with small crowds. Big crowds take a lot of energy out of him, but he's starting to do better with that and open up and, you know, wanting, you know, desiring to travel more and, you know, not always telling everybody no immediately. You know, sometimes he looks at things and to see if it's going to benefit us, to determine if we're going to do certain things, because like he says, he doesn't want to limit what we do due to the fact that he's afraid.
Right.
You know, so it's one of those things where, you know, he's starting to open up more and things like that. And so I'm like, I'm here for it. And I think that, me pushing him and encouraging him to do that, over the years, not only did it give him confidence, it gave me confidence, because for the first time, we realized what we were worth. Because most people work 9 to 5, and you don't realize your worth. Most jobs make you feel like you're worthless. Most jobs make you feel like you ought to be thankful that we even let you in the door. Most jobs do. Yep. Most jobs, mm-hmm. particularly if they're jobs that do forms of micromanaging and do things where they do productivity and things like that, it always demeans you and makes you feel small and make you feel worthless and make you just feel like a cog in a wheel, and it actually beats your hopes out of you, beats your dreams out of you, beats your aspirations out of you. You know, all of a sudden you quit speaking up. All of a sudden you quit speaking out. All of a sudden you come to school, you go to work, you won't talk to nobody. You plug your headphones in and you be at the desk 8 hours. You start cutting.
Whoa, Karen, do you have a camera on me when I'm at work?
No. but I know that's how it can be, Chris.
I know.
Because before you know it, all of a sudden things that used to matter don't matter no more. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, I know nothing going to change. I don't want to be bothered, you know, unless it directly affect my job. Don't talk to me. Let me plug in with my music, my podcast. Let me work my 8, 10, 12 hours a day. Let me go home. And it makes the days almost suck the life out of you. And yeah. I think doing this podcast is my escape from reality. Even when we both were working, it was both our escape. Because people were like, well, I come to you to escape. Well, we do the podcast to escape. You know, yeah. So we both into this place, if that makes sense.
No,
so,
it makes total sense. Like, again, going back to me trying to figure shit out in New York, and I still don't have it figured out, but just to have like some type of grounding where it's like, oh, Rod and Karen, oh, Bomani, oh, Brandon, oh, Chris, and like all these people are, you know, doing things and they're talking about this album or they're doing, it's just something that kind of keeps you sane. And it's like when I listen to a podcast, a lot of the times, like before I listen to the shit that's always in on the Time Out magazine or on these lists, before I listen to those like podcasts, I'm listening to you guys. I'm listening to JL. I'm listening to, you know, Medium Popcorn, because that's how you check in with your friends nowadays.
You know? Right. I listen to you guys on. Like, right. I just have like a list of podcasts that I have in my rotation. I do branch out because we're always listening for, you know, for new people to kind of introduce to our audience.
Yeah.
But I literally have a core podcast like that I listen to probably about a good 10 that I never miss a week. Like, yeah. If it pops up in my feed, I'm there for it.
Right, right. Yeah, it's so important. And I think, and if you don't have something that is your podcast or your comedy or your gardening or whatever it is, like, you'll really be lost. It just makes the world a lot rougher. It makes it more difficult. Yeah.
It does. And also I think that now with Roger and me both, we have confidence now in ourselves that we've never had before. I know my worth, you know. The thing is, when you were independent, you work more. You actually invest more hours, you know, because of what you do, you know, because Roger, he's basically the IT, the tech support, you know, he's the secretary, like he's an admin, administrator, he does it all. And a lot of that he does to make it easy for me, because like I said, I still work 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
So, you know, he makes it so when I get home, and because a lot of people, you know, sometimes I'm amazed at, and it's not even a bragging thing, I'm just amazed at all the things that we've accomplished that I can do. I work 40 hours a week. I come home 30 minutes to an hour. I turn around and do the show, record for 2 or 3 hours. And then, you know, all TV shows are back. So I'm 2 hours of TV after that, you know, or whatever. I go to bed and get up and we do it tomorrow. It's like a rotation, you know. So, you know, I will tell people I work 40 hours a week. And a lot of times, depending on what's going on, I do a podcast 40 hours a week, because this is just the normal show. It's 5 days a week. That's not including if we go to the movies. That's not including any other premium shows. That's not including Nerd Off or whatever else that I'm on. In addition to that. So it was one of those things where I guess I'm a worker and I grind. And sometimes I have to be careful because I know I could be a workaholic. You know, everybody doesn't have a workaholic spirit, but I know I do. Yeah. So I have to kind of calm that down and then not tire myself out. And sometimes I'm like, not today. You know, I'm just pooped. I'm tired because, you know, you just go and you grind it. And you're in. The thing is, you're not including, you're throwing in exercise. You know, what prefer, a lot of times I'll wake up extra early to work out, or I'll work out when I get home and, you know, trying to eat better, get all your numbers under control. Like, it's particularly as you get older, your body doesn't function the same. Your metabolism ain't as high. As being a woman, you get hair chin. You're like, where the hell this come from? It's an adventure.
Yeah. It's one of those things. I guess I want to, and then I guess we'll just lighten it up, and then we'll wrap it up a little bit. I know that you're a gamer. What are you playing these days? What do you like, or what are you playing? What did you finish? What's going on in your video game queue?
For me, I'm not as hardcore as like Roger and Chris and all them. I'm gonna tell you that right now. I don't do nothing.
You play.
But I do play. But I'm just letting people know you ain't gonna get no Gears of War, nothing like that. No, you know, nothing like that. I'm terrible at first person shooter games. I'm bad.
Me too.
But I play, if you 10 and under, a lot of times this is right up your alley. I just keep it real. I'm like, you 12 below, we can be better. Because for me, I don't like to think when I'm playing. I like to get on and just enjoy the game.
Oh, God.
And so, on my tablet, I'm playing this game called Dash Diner, or Diner Dash. It's a simple game. It's like a touch game.
Okay.
And so, backstory is this girl, and she has a diner, and, you know, she's trying to build up the diner, and you know, this boss man is trying to sabotage a diner, so he does silly stuff, like he'll make the plate slip out of her hands while she's trying to serve customers. It's a really, really fun game.
Yeah.
So I like, as far as like a tablet game, but as far as like, we got an Xbox One, so as far as that, Stardew Valley, I've been playing that game for over a year now. I really, really love it, because the game has no ending. It literally has no ending. You can play it forever. And basically, your granddaddy dies, and he leaves your farm, and you go to his farm, you know, little hick town that his farm's in, and you can make your player, male or female, I pick the female, and you can make her as brown as you want, so I like brown people. And so, you can play the game.
Wait
and
a minute,
like,
Karen, so you're making sharecroppers, basically? I'm sorry, it's a bad joke.
But you can actually hire people. So, but hey, you know, I haven't hired nobody to work on my farm yet. But yeah, you can actually do sharecropping. You know, so you went too far fetched. So you far from that.
You and I had a game. And I think Rod did, but I think mainly it's you. You and I had the. Oh my god! Don't do this, Chris. I'm having a brain fart. Oh God! The name of the game. Shit.
Well, you play with the avatar. Yeah.
What's wrong with me? You're the girl, and she uses time. What the hell is the name, Ashley? I just read an article about this woman who did the voice of Chloe, and I got the name.
Oh, we're talking about Life is Strange.
Yes, thank God. Yeah, Life is Strange. Yeah. Are you into the new one, the sequel, or the?
I haven't played that yet. I actually need to finish the original. I haven't finished the series because I know it's a series.
Yeah.
But I really like, I enjoyed that game because that game was fun.
Yeah.
I like games that you kind of go around and you put the pieces together. And like I said, every time I see the butterflies, I panic and I go back and I redo it.
I do too. That was an intense game. That's an intense game.
Yes. And so, like I said, I hadn't finished it, but that's another game I enjoy. Also, another game I enjoy is Oceanhorn.
Okay.
I call it a Zelda imitation. I'm a big Zelda fan. But it's similar to Zelda, but it's on the Xbox One. It's called Oceanhorn. That's a really, really fun game. I enjoy that. I'm trying to think. Anything else that I've actually played recently? Those are like the more recent things that I've played.
Because everybody's talking about the Nintendo Switch now. Like they're saying that Zelda might be game of the year.
You know, and I believe them. I've played like the older Zeldas. The Zeldas on like a two or three generations as far as like the systems go.
Me too.
Because I haven't had a Nintendo in years. Because the thing about Nintendo over their games don't really drop in prices. And so I was like, well, I'm not. The system 4 or 5 years old and still paying full price. So I I love it, but I've kind of given up on it. And I hope something that they continue to do. Like, have you played Run Mario Run?
No. What is that?
That is a really fun game. Run Mario Run is a game with Mario, but you can put it on your tablet, you can put it on your phone, and it doesn't have to be associated with anything Nintendo.
Oh,
even
okay.
though you can help the Nintendo stuff, and this is something I said they need to do years ago. Get out of making video games and get into apps. Keep all your games, just put them out on apps, put them out on tablets, you make a killing. Get out of the video game console wars because you're not really willing to invest the money into it. Because yeah, you got a console, but you can't. They have certain features that's so far behind, and I just don't like it. But Run Mario Run, I think I played it on my tablet. It's really fun, and the name of the game is what he does. Mario just runs. So when you turn the game on, he just runs forward. That's all he does. He runs. And so as he runs, you can take your finger, and as you move your finger, he'll follow you. So you want him to jump, you put your finger how high and where you want him to land, and he'll just jump there. You draw your hand up, he'll go up. He'll go down, and let's say you die, you come up in so it's actually an unlimited life game. Because if you die, you come up in this bubble, and the bubble will float, and then once you pop the bubble, you hit the ground, he'll just start running forward again. It is a really, 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 it's a simple game, and it's a fun game, and that's all he does. Mario just runs forward across the screen. And there's some things that they do automatically, he'll do automatically, but there's some things you kind of have to do with your fingers, and you build this whole new world, and it's a really, really fun game. And so I really wish what they would do is make Zelda a tablet version.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially because for Nintendo, their first-party games are their best games.
Yes.
But the thing is, you're only going to get one Zelda a generation. You're only get one Mario a generation. And that's anything you're going to get is some BS game that they, Mario Smash. I don't care nothing about that. You know, or something like, no, I can't. And the thing is, with the other gaming consoles, you get 2 and 3 Gears of Wars in the console. You know what I'm trying to make fun, right?
Yeah.
You get 2 and 3. So it's like, well, then I bought this system when it first came out for your first party games, and I'm getting one per 10 years. That doesn't make any sense. One per 7-8 years. With these other consoles, they might have, you know, now they're making them better, a 10-year span, and pretty soon you're going to buy one console, and all they're going to do is just send upgrades on it. You know, which they do now, send upgrades to the system to upgrade it, and maybe every 10 to 12 years, here's a brand new one. You know, not because some of them, they do like phones, where they go, hey, you can get an upgrade if you choose, but your other one works just fine if you don't want to upgrade, you
yeah.
know? And so I'd rather Nintendo, like I said before, just go to tablets. Just go to tablets or phones. Just start getting into the app version, because they made a kill off of Pokemon Go, and they weren't even the ones to create it.
Yeah, that's true, because it seems like Nintendo is mainly like child, like for kids, but then like
right.
this Nintendo Switch, their third party games, like I don't know, it just seems like everybody's always talking about Zelda when they talk about Nintendo Switch. It's just Zelda. It's not like did they even do a Metroid for it?
I don't think they have one yet, or I'm not mistaken, it's in the workings. But
yeah.
those are the titles, Metro, Mario, and Zelda. Those are the only three things that people buy. And also, Nintendo always gets short end of the stick, because if you normally make a game between PlayStation and Xbox, they normally can make one version, maybe tweak it a little bit per system, and you got a game. You have to basically refigure everything for Nintendo. People are like, I don't want to make a brand new game.
Yeah.
Literally to go onto your console. So a lot of people just opt not to make Nintendo games.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, it just seems like, and then, I mean, then they're making a killing off the little retro systems, the Super Nintendo and the regular NES. And it just, I guess maybe they're banking on people's nostalgia, I guess.
Yeah, and I think, in my opinion, that's why Nintendo has made all the money. But you know what? Nostalgia is only going to go so far, because not trying to funny, as our generation, because we're the generation purchasing these things. As we get older, the new generation, they ain't grow up with these, so they're not going to have the same nostalgia that we have.
Right.
You know, so y'all got to give them something other than the nostalgia going to be for us. And guess what? as we get older and all those that we begin to die out, that market is going to get smaller and smaller. So like I said, you can't always depend on nostalgia. So and I think Nintendo, and not Nintendo, PlayStation and Xbox will be around for a while, not unless somebody else comes in. I think the big two with Nintendo, I could see them going, hey, we're just doing console. I mean, we're just doing applications. Yeah. You know, I could see them putting out a console. You know, they're not going to sell. And the thing is, they sell because it's one of them people buying from their children. But you know what? Their children might play for Christmas. And then what? I've never seen people after about a 6 months to a year, you playing that? Nah, I'm not playing no more. You playing that? Nah, I sold it. Yeah, like, because we've had friends that buy it. And we ask them, are you playing it? Nah.
Because I know a guy like a guy like Brandon will get everything. Like he'll get all of them. And I mean, like, that's it is what it is. I mean, I don't know. Like, this, it looks good. This stuff looks good. This Zelda thing. As you're talking, I'm pulling up all the games that you're talking about, and I'm just looking at like this Nintendo Switch stuff. Like, it looks great.
Right. Every Zelda always get rave reviews. Every Mario always get rave reviews. But the mass general public never gets to play it because most of us are like, I'm not buying a Nintendo. Yeah. I'm not buying a Nintendo.
That's true. It's so true.
So, like, the children would buy it, and you will have some adults that would buy it. But most of the adults want to play games where they can go online. I don't even know if you can go online with your friends. Like, the system is just jacked up. So if I got a PlayStation, I should be able to get online with my friends and play. Play an Xbox, get online with my friends and play. Send you an invite, and let's go. You know, this should be a complex or a complicated system. And the thing is Nintendo, I don't even know if they have digital yet. They might have digital. I don't know. But I know with the other two systems, you got digital. All jokes aside, I'm about the future. Mm-hmm. Don't give me no disc. I want digital. I want to hit button, download, and keep it trucking.
So I talk about this. So that's interesting that you brought that up, because I'm getting to the place now where I get made fun of sometimes for being like an old media dude, like where it's just like, I was thinking about like getting I bought NBA 2K18, and I was thinking like, oh, should I get this? Should I start getting them downloaded now, or should I get the disc? And especially when it comes to movies, like Blu-rays, I like to have the copy, like the disc itself. And I just pre-ordered this movie on iTunes, and I'm wondering, it's just like, should I be moving on to? I'm just like an MP3 guy. I still have my iPod. I still have my iPod, but everybody's on Spotify, and I don't feel like I have the album until I either have it on MP3. Or the hard CD, but everybody's like Spotify. Like, The Big Crit came out on Friday, and I was like,
Apple. I have it. Yeah, I downloaded it. I feel like this. I hadn't listened to it yet before. Everybody said it is flame emojis. I'm like some people. Everybody saying it's flame.
It's great.
So I'm definitely going to sit down and listen to it, because I love Big Crit. Not to get off topic. The thing is, this is what I realized. It's a generational thing, Chris, because y'all think our generation was pre-internet.
Yes.
So because we were pre-internet, we actually do things very old school. Mm-hmm. But what I realized is one of the things, once you make that switch, your life will change forever.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that, because my mother-in-law, she was really old school. She was like, Karen, get Roger to make me a CD. And I looked at her and I said, ain't nobody about to make you no CD. She said, why? I said, mm-mm. I put the app on her phone. I said, look, I will pay the $5 a month to add you to my service. You get, pick what you want to pick.
Does it mess up your data? Like, if you have Spotify and you're playing it in your car?
No, what the thing is that the technology has gotten better.
Okay.
With a lot of this stuff, with Spotify, with Stitcher, and with iTunes, you can actually download them.
Okay.
So when you download them, it if I want a record, I'll download that one record.
Like The Big Crit, you can download the new album to your Spotify, so when you're driving in the car, it's not eating away at your data.
Right.
Okay.
And but but you can play things that are not downloading. Now that goes against your data. Yeah. You know, like if you're outside of your Wi-Fi at your home.
Right.
You know, at home, I just play anything. But that's what I do to kind of get around that. Anything that I really like. Like, it's some albums that are, like, classics. Like, all the Kendrick Lamar albums I've downloaded. You know, it's certain things. Because every now and then, I just got to hear, we going to be all right. You
yeah,
know?
Exactly.
I know that might sound, crazy, but that, like, and not to get off top, but that particular song right there, y'all just don't know how much that helped me. Sometimes I've listened to that song and just be crying and singing it. Cause
yeah.
I was like, look, I know it might sound silly, but it motivates me. Cause sometimes you just get in a place where you got to motivate yourself that it's going to be all right, particularly in the climate that we're in. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I've learned that, for Spotify and Tidal, cause we do Spotify, Tidal, and Apple. I know I do all three.
Okay.
The biggest reason I do all three, I'm gonna tell you right now. I am a Beyonce fan. I know most people know that.
Yeah.
And we didn't have Tidal, and something came out. I think not this album, but two or three albums ago, she was like, I'm on Tidal. I was like, well, I'll be getting Tidal. They were like, you don't cancel it. I was like, I don't know when her next album coming, because I got a feeling that her album's coming soon, honey. She been walking around here with her iMac book. She doing something. So we going to see a tour. We're going to see a video. We're going to see something that's going to be coming out with her, and I got to get it. And I think most people are going to drop it. They're going to drop it on Tidal. They're going to drop it on Spotify, or they're going to drop it on Apple. Most people drop their stuff on all three.
Yeah.
You know, but some people have exclusivity deals. So I'm like, I don't know. When music come out, I was like, I don't know what's going to come out on. But I know that I'm at a place in my life where that's a luxury. No, not trying to be funny. For a lot of people that I look, I can only pick one service.
Yeah.
So I'm knocking that. So a lot of times, in my opinion, if you can only pick one service, do Spotify.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
If you can only do one service, you know, Apple Music, we're iPhone users, so Apple, you know, that was automatic because we're Apple users. But with Spotify, normally if it goes to Tidal, eventually it'll come to Spotify. And normally if it goes to Spotify, it probably is on Tidal at the same time, or it eventually move to Tidal. I like Tidal, don't get me wrong, but I like I said, if you had to jump between Spotify and Tidal, I would do Spotify. Now, I love Jay-Z and Beyonce, and I'll support them, so I give them my money no matter what.
Right.
You know, I know some people have to, you know, choose, because I'm trying to find it's like $9.99 a month. So if you do two, it's $20 a month. But you have to think, $20 a month, that's what you're paying in the old school CD prices. Let's keep that real. I tell people,
yeah.
I say, you go, but I just, maybe if you get them on sale the first weekend, you might get it $9.99. But, you know, if you wait, you're paying $20. So for some people, for the amount of music, especially if you really consume a lot of music, just go ahead and pay the $20, because that's what it is. And, you know, for Tidal, you can upgrade to HD, and that HD is worth it because it sounds